Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of The Cooldown. Cooldown. This is officially the seventh episode. And today, we've got Wonga in the house, the Dengasaurus. We've got Lolo, Silo, Kale, the United, aka our devil man. And then we've got Mourinho, the short English version of, you know, Mourinho. How's it going, gentlemen?
The short English version.
Yeah.
And I see Mourinho's got a different background now, eh? Yeah.
And someone's
watching us in the back as well. The GZ.
The Spurs fan in training.
You see, Silo, when you top the log, your environment starts changing. You know, it's a different mindset. You know, they receive shirts and everything. That's kind of what happens at the moment. Am I right?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, of course. Yeah. You know, it's like, sing when you're winning and all that. But we seem surprised that Wonga's got his shirt up.
Look, I couldn't thank Wonga for showing up. He shows up week in, week out. So thank you very much, Wonga. We really appreciate you, regardless of what.
It's more can be said for the Arsenal team itself, eh?
Yeah.
Dads, we've got one in the house, Scotty Woodhouse.
Hey,
welcome, Scotty. How's Scotty?
And we've got Jason, Scotty Too Hotty. Jason's giving a shout out. Yeah. Welcome, guys.
Jason.
Yeah. But before you guys go, we were saying we need to figure out a sort of, because we've got a battle royale happening between you and Matt for obvious reasons. You wanna lift up why? We'll show everyone what the battle royale is. Okay. You guys wanna talk about it? Say what's going on here?
I'm having a devil's peak lager. It's for Scott who's not in South Africa. It's a beer all the way from Cape Town, and it's obviously it's named after a certain part of Table Mountain. Yeah, so it's a premium lager. Scott should order it and get it delivered. That he won't regret it.
Oh, good. And you, Matt, what you got there?
I'm drinking a Zwakala, a Limpopo lager, which I mean, it's not Cape Town, but I mean, and that's probably a good thing because Cape Town, you know, it's a bit Cape Town. it's unlikely that someone like Scott's been to Limpopo on holiday because Cape Town gets all the traffic, but Limpopo's that little bit cooler. It's a little bit more rural, a little bit more nature, and the beer as a result is a little bit pure, a little bit more delicious. It hasn't been brewed on the bottom of a mountain surrounded by dope smoking hippies, but rather in nature, you know, a couple of avo trees in the background. So I think if you're going to order a South African beer and have it delivered all the way to Scotland, go with Zwakala.
So I kind of feel like how the battle royale is going to work today is every time Kane gets mentioned or Cavani gets mentioned, you guys have to have a sip, either or. And the first one to finish their drink is going to be the winner of the battle royale. I think that's how we're going to move forward. But before moving forward, we're going to talk about the first game today. And that's the Brighton-Liverpool game, gents. I mean, a lot happened there. Wonga, you already started off with the reaction. You obviously watched the game. What are your thoughts overall before I get dip my thoughts into this?
Yeah, I mean, I think if I looked at Brighton, I thought Brighton brought it to Liverpool. Liverpool, I think, as well, also tried to... I think the team, I mean, the defense, I thought that was for me the biggest worry from Liverpool's point of view. And obviously we had the big talking points. I mean, first, before that, the penalty caused by your young man. What is it? Was it Matthews? What's his name?
Williams,
sorry. Yeah. Yes, that was very, very rash. But I mean, youngster expected.
I mean, we can go into this, but that penalty, you say that's a rash sort of penalty. For me, I think if it's a footballer reffing the game, you know exactly what Connolly is doing in that scenario, and you don't give it as a penalty. That's the player wasn't even running towards the ball. He put his body in front of the Williams is the only player making a genuine attempt for the ball. He's the only one. And what happens is the player just puts his body in front of the ball and takes a knock, goes down. And by letter of the law, in terms of how the refs give penalties, they say that it was contact, therefore it was a penalty. But in my opinion, that's something the youngster is going to learn with time. Unfortunately, he's genuinely trying to play the game there, and the striker's got it. He's taking advantage of the scenario.
He has jumped, Cloud. He was off his feet. This guy was off his... He literally jumped, and he stamped his foot in front of the guy. It's... For me, that's not... It's not sensible at all. You're going to get punished for doing something like that. Is there no chance, Jason Sergel? No, guys. That, guys, I saw the ways. No ways. Watching the same game.
There was no way for penalty. It was a strike. And you know what? If you watch the whole game properly, Connolly does exactly the same thing further up the pitch as well. He throws his body in front of the ball, and then he gets a little free kick. And that's all they had going for them, to be honest, in the whole Brighton game. But, Joe, sorry, before I get – you can see I'm super passionate about this for obvious reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's hear your objective sort of opinion on this matter.
Now, look, I'll say again, I thought definitely the first one was a penalty. The second one look, it helped us out.
We've got a very biased panel in today.
It's a soft penalty.
Yeah, it was soft.
Soft.
Yeah. Let's say you met.
Yeah, the thing is, it's the same. Like I go, it reminds me of the Spurs game with Newcastle early in the season, where we were also we ended up drawing to a soft penalty. But in many ways, we only had ourselves to blame because we had plenty of chances to kill off that game. We shouldn't have been in a position where a debatable penalty lost us the points. And I think Liverpool are in the same position. That's a game where you should be dominating enough and scoring enough goals that one dodgy penalty shouldn't change it. And I think, and to a certain extent, Klopp was right. I think fatigue was a factor, especially in Liverpool's case. They've got such a the squads, you know, they've got a lot of injuries as it is. And I think that is a factor. But also, you got to a certain extent, in the same way that we had to kind of take our medicine against Newcastle, you got to be like, if you're going to leave it that, if you're going to only be leading by one goal in a game where you feel like you're dominating, eventually there's such a good chance that you're just not going to be, you know, you're going to be, if you're only scoring one goal in a game like that, there's a good chance you're not going to get the points. So I think that's going
to
come back.
To be fair, Matt, we actually scored 3 goals in the game. And that comes to like a whole other, no, the other question. VAR coming in.
Come on.
Again.
But Claudio, you can't talk about Mane's goal as if it was,
Mane's goal. Okay, fine. No, I'm just saying. Look,
Salah's goal, yes, but not Mane's goal. Mane's goal was a clear offside. That didn't have to have a line drawn.
Who cares about yes or no what? I was clearly stating facts. 3 times the ball was put in the back of the net, and 3 times, you know, that's what the scenario was. If we're looking here, Salah's goal for me, that sort of thing for anybody in any team, if that's a scenario that they're going to be ruling offside, that should be given a goal, no matter what. If you're saying 10 millimeters is offside, you can literally go fuck yourself, because I'm not interested in watching the game like that. One of the biggest thing about VAR, the issue I have, and I know it's week in, week out, we're talking about this shit, but the biggest issue I have with VAR is the momentum it kills for the game, not only for viewers, but for players. The scenario is, you know, momentum is all about the energy. You look for something to pick you up, a good pass or whatever it is. But as soon as VAR comes in, that's 3-4 minutes, you've literally just ripped out any sort of momentum. There's no chance in hell a team can come back. In the scenario where Liverpool suffers that late penalty, if it wasn't for VAR, possibly, you know, they suffer a late goal, Liverpool can pick themselves up and pick up the momentum and go the other way. But because it's VAR, the guys are like, not again. This is the third or fourth time in the same game this has happened. It literally, all it does is demoralizes you. What are you meant to do in that scenario? So for me, this whole thing, I'm so over it. And I know, I mean, it's happened a lot to Liverpool in this time, but no one can tell me sitting here that you guys are all happy with currently what's happening with VAR.
Definitely.
I think the inconsistency for me again is also a big question. Because Danny Welbeck, when he got clipped, because you saw the when he got clipped by Robertson, you know, everyone carried on playing. Danny Welbeck went down. Cameras got carried on moving even. And then they went back and they called it a penalty. But my question is, are they checking everything like this? They don't check everything like this, because sometimes we look back and we say, oh, that could have been called a penalty. And it's exactly the same, let's say, sort of touch that Danny Welbeck. I don't know what word you would use, but it's the same sort of intensity that Danny Welbeck's penalty appeal was. Yeah. And they never look back. But this one they did look back. So that's the thing I don't understand.
They're picky about what they look at in the box.
Yes.
Clear and obvious error. Yeah. That was not a clear and obvious error. And the biggest issue, someone mentioned it earlier, or someone said it somewhere, and I thought it was perfect. VAR or refereeing, when you're making these decisions, they're there to be in the context of the time. You're not there to forensically analyze what the hell's happened. Because by definition, if we've got to look at all of that, you know, it's a rash sort of swing. Yes. Is the contact enough to bring the player down? Hell no. You can see there's a delayed reaction. He even thinks about it afterwards. It's like, oh, wait, my toes got clipped. Oh, I'm going to fall over. You know, it is one of those where he's, Welbeck's even come out saying it was a soft thing. But, you know, regardless about that, I think if we're looking at the whole situation from a Liverpool perspective, the team's fatigued. We've got Milner. The likes of Milner is 34 years old. Sure, he's a machine. But he's played 3 games in 6 days at a high intensity. He's pulled up his hamstring. We've got, you know, managing players where you've brought on Henderson at halftime just to try and keep us going again and mitigate his game time. Because, again, tonight they're playing against Ajax. The other thing that you've got to consider is you've got freaking all these guys where the manager's got to be now. You've got a Salah who's had COVID. He gets taken off and he's got a long face and he's sulking because he wants to play. And this is the manager going, fuck, dude, just take it easy. We actually need you for the next 6 games coming, not just the 45 minutes. And in that scenario, Brighton were nowhere in the game. It was a 1-0 in the bag. The game was wrapped up. That's what it was. Yeah. Henderson came on, took control of the situation. And unfortunately, you know, VAR decided, you know what, let's make this league interesting. So maybe, I don't know. Selo, you're always vocal about these sort of things when it comes to football in general, but when it comes to Liverpool in particular, you've generally got a sort of certain angle. So curious to hear your thoughts as to how this panned out and what you thought about the result.
VAR is VAR, man. It's rubbish. It's ruining our game. You know what I mean? There's nothing I hate more in VAR currently than the whole offside rule, you know, drawing lines, you know. It happened to Villa as well yesterday with Ollie Watkins. It's rubbish, man. So it's unfortunate that now, I think it's the second time now Liverpool have a goal ruled out against Everton and then now also against Brighton, where it's not an offside. You know what I mean? If you have to draw lines and look at arms and armpits and all of this stuff, it's sort of offside. With regards to the second penalty for Robertson, on Welbeck, hey man, listen, these things, if you're a Brighton supporter, you're like, hey man, a touch in the box is a penalty. But if you're a Liverpool supporter, you say that's soft. And as neutrals, that's soft, man, you know what I mean? I'm happy that Liverpool got a draw.
Okay, but based on that happiness, Scotty's happy that you both have a drink because he's just mentioned Cavani, so you both have to take a sip of your drink quickly, guys.
But come on. But how can you
go for it? Yeah, there we go. Okay, that's fine. Okay, but
where's your drink, man? You're in the wild, man. Don't you have a beer that was made outside of something?
I've been drinking champagne the whole day. That's what's been happening on my interview.
Oh, must be nice. Life in the bush is amazing, eh?
Yeah.
It's amazing in the bush, just not at Anfield at the moment. Yeah, things are a bit tricky down there. I think one of the other things I want to ask you guys is Klopp came out straight after the game. The whole schedule dilemma, and he mentioned the schedule thing. And for me, I can understand where he's coming from, obviously being a Liverpool fan, but also from a bigger team sort of perspective where you're saying, you know, we've played all these games now. We've played high sort of pressure sort of games where our squad's already thinned out, and you're making us play a lunchtime kickoff game just so you can have all the top teams scheduled out so viewers can watch them. It makes no sense. And at this point in time, Liverpool are the one team that have had the most lunchtime kickoffs. I know Man United are going to be, there's going to be a period where they're going to have just as many. So it's going to be interesting where I'm pretty sure Ole is probably going to agree with him at some point. But that's one thing Klopp's been able to do. He's almost got this sort of, this Ferguson sort of appeal where he can challenge what's happening around him within the football and bring things to light. And he's also come out saying Chris Wilder is a douchebag because he's the only one who wants 3 subs and they've only got 1 point in the league. So in terms of your opinion, in terms of like scheduling these games, I mean, we understand, let's give the time context as to COVID and everything else and be like, why are they doing this? I understand from a competitive side, if you're a smaller team, you're going to want to take any competitive advantage. Yes, Selo.
Yeah.
It's if you think about it, actually, it's the clubs that agreed to these kickoff times. So it's not like the broadcasters set the time. The broadcasters tell the clubs, okay, listen, we're going to schedule like this. Are you guys happy? And the club said, yes, we are happy. So Klopp must talk to his chief executive to go and talk to the league because the chief executive accepted the time. You know what I mean? He accepted the time. It's not the broadcasters. You know what I mean? The broadcasters are there to broadcast the games. They don't decide on what time you play. It's the Premier League. And who is the Premier League? Premier League is the 20 clubs. 14 out of 20 gets a motion to change anything. So it's not the broadcasters, it's the Premier League that set the times. So he must not take the blame to the broadcasters. He was actually left, that argument that he had this past weekend wasn't great. It was quite weak. Other arguments previously, I can understand. You know, Lampard had a very valid argument. Mr. International break, lunchtime kickoff, it's Chelsea playing at 12 o'clock. He has players playing in South America that arrived on Thursday night. That I can understand completely. You know what I mean? Liverpool played on Wednesday at home. And then now they're complaining about playing at lunchtime on a Saturday.
Yeah.
You know, I understand Ole was different. Ole had already complained about this, but he was playing in Istanbul. He had to come, he had to fly from Istanbul and come back to the UK. Whereas now,
regardless of the distance, I think at the end of the day, there's a lot of energy and time and spent. And I think when you're looking at the data analytics and you've got your team around you from a Liverpool perspective or even a United perspective, they are at this point in time where these guys are monitoring the soreness, the stiffness, the fatigue of the players. And they're actually saying, look, coach, this is the squad you've got. And technically, just by their conditioning, your players X, Y, and Z, and a lot of them, the younger players, are the only ones that are fit enough to go and to be ready to play. The others, we just really just trying to manage to make sure they don't get injured. And I like what you said, Salo. Yes, things were agreed. Things were agreed with the clubs and the Premier League and the broadcasters, but this was all agreed prior to all of this in terms of what had happened. So surely what I'm saying again, this comes to everything. None of this makes sense because they're like, oh, football as usual. The world's not working as usual, but let's go football as usual. And you know what? If anything else, we're going to just cram all the games in one. And I like what Jason said here. Brighton players were also breaking down, getting injured. They're not even in Europe. So it's product's going to be effective at the end of the day.
But I don't think it's the broadcast. It's the kickoff time that we should look at. It's the whole substitution factor that we should look at. That's the key one, I think. That's the one that will allow teams to obviously use their bench a bit more and to have more people on the bench. Because obviously when you have five subs, you have more people on the bench as well. That at least will allow the teams to make more substitutions. So that's what's happening now is obviously, yes, the calendar is cramped up, right?
Yeah.
Because obviously we're trying to play Champions League, all six Champions League games and Europa League games, all the rounds before the end of the year. So we can go into the knockout phase, which is how they've done it previously. It's cramped up, you know, it's unfortunate. And obviously Liverpool has obviously been most affected. But I think also it's because of the type of play that they do have in terms of that high intensity, high pressing. That's why I think a lot of their players have a lot of muscle injuries. It's also style of play. Whereas other teams have been less affected because of their style of play. So if Pochettino was managing Spurs now, like he would also, his team would also be hurt because Pochettino's team was also quite a high pressing team. And if a Southampton was playing in Europe as well, their players would be breaking down. But they only playing every 7 days, which they've been fortunate with, because the high pressing teams are the ones that are being affected the most.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And before we move on from the Liverpool game, there are two things that need to be mentioned. There's one that Jota is still, I mean, the player, he's just always showing up for Liverpool at the moment in time. And if he's not showing up, we're struggling to score goals. The other thing I want to talk about is, guys, if you have a player, I don't know if you saw Mo Salah getting taken off and seeing his reaction to him getting taken, like sulking like a toddler. What are your overall feelings when your star player gets taken off like that and he behaves in that manner? What do you guys think about that, Wonga?
I think it's bound to happen. I mean, the guy wants to play. He wants to score. It's going to happen with any player that wants to play. But I think, again, I think maybe there will be a chat where you're saying, look, you must just be considerate of what you're doing. You're showing everyone else what you're doing, and it just looks funny at the end of the day. But also, on the other hand, maybe they really don't care what anyone else thinks. I think they do have an understanding, Klopp and Salah. I'm pretty sure he knows that probably he was definitely not going to be happy. And yeah, but he's not worried about that. He's really worried about the long term. And he looks probably like you said it yourself. Explain that to him when they get off. Like, hey, look, buddy, you're complaining, you're whinging, but you've got another six games coming up where you need to be a part of that. And you just, that's the way it is now. That's how it
is. I like Scott's comment there. I like Scott's comment there.
Yeah.
What did you think, Matt? What did you think about that scenario?
Look, I think outside the squad, people read a lot into these things that aren't necessarily there. I think any yeah. one of us in Salah's situation would probably get a bit upset at being taken off. You know, he's a professional there. He wants to be a part of every game. He wants to be playing, trying for goals and that. And it doesn't necessarily mean that him and Klopp are falling out. It doesn't mean that he's a trouble in the dressing room. It means that in that moment, he was a bit frustrated. Like, why are you doing this? You know, I think all of us can relate to that in any situation. It's not just footballers. In any facet of your life, if there's something that you really want to do, and people are telling you to step back, and even if they've got a legitimate reason, you need to calm down, you need to rest, you've got other stuff coming up, you're going to be frustrated and you're going to display that frustration. I often think we read too much into these things. Unless he actually walks off and physically slaps the coach and they get into a fist fight on the side of the field, I don't think that it's really indicative of anything bigger. And you do want to see that. To a certain extent, you want your players to want to be on the field. You know, if he skipped off, like, walk straight down the thing, taking his shirt off before he's gone, you'd be a bit like, hey, mate, we should be more to you than that. I don't think it's a big issue. If we started to see it be the start of a longer divide between them, Klopp and Salah suddenly not communicating and Salah not being played and eventually ended up like Ozil just playing with the mascot on the side of the field, then maybe it's a different thing. But I think in this particular instance, I don't think it's a big deal. I think
the reason I asked the question is largely because there were a lot of Liverpool fans going, oh no, Salah is better than that. He shouldn't be acting like that, blah, 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 put the team first. And I'm just like, exactly to what you were saying. When I used to play, it actually didn't matter. It didn't matter. When I was on the field, I wanted to play 90 minutes. And it didn't even – if the coach was pulling me off, I had a scenario where I was concussed. I was legit concussed. They checked me. They pulled me off. We were playing Wits at the time, and the kit was yellow. And I couldn't see the color of the shirts. And eventually, like, no, listen, you got to come off. And I was still pissed off at the fact that they'd take me off. I mean, that's just retarded on my side. But at the end of the day, you get the point. Like, that's just –
you want to be involved.
Yeah, you always want to be playing, man. You always want to be giving the best regardless of – what and when and who's making the decision. Sorry, I'm getting
you couldn't see the color and you still want. What's wrong?
No, I'm sorry. I've got like all these insects like chowing.
Well, I thought you can hear it.
Right, next game, Silo. You wanted to start talking. I think it's a great time for you to start talking. Some people are saying Cavani sucks. I'm not going to say who's saying it, but we know that Cavani did the business for you guys.
Hey, did the things, man. Bro.
Hey, listen. This game was quite interesting because in the first half we had clear cut chances that we didn't convert. McCarthy made some good saves, and Southampton scored from their two chances. So yeah, man. Going to second half, it was quite tricky, but the guys pulled through in the end, keeping our record 8 wins in a row away from home. I think it shows the character in the team and the way they came back to get the victory. And yeah, man, what more can you say about our Uruguay player scoring 2 goals late on? You know what I mean? That was quite impressive.
What's that Uruguay player's name?
Yeah, man, I'm trying to tiptoe around it, eh? But yeah, man, he came on, showed why. He's so lethal in the box. The first goal was a poacher's goal. And the second goal was great movement that you always get from him within the box. I was frustrated with Marcus Rashford's decision-making in the game. Too many times he made the wrong decision. And we could have clawed back the lead, the deficit, earlier on in the game, where he could have rather passed the ball across or he could have shot at the right time and so forth.
The way he could have passed to Cavani. That was the only one option was to pass. Cavani's not marked. You literally it's 2-on-1 the goalkeeper. Pass
and
the ball.
And you want to shoot.
That was madness what he was doing. I can't understand it. Like, it was the obvious thing. Cavani's literally facing the goal. I don't know.
That was frustrating. But in the end, it didn't cost us. So if it did cost us, I was going to be furious. But it was a good game nonetheless. Southampton did what I expected. If Ward-Prowse got a free kick outside the box, guys, I knew. I literally, I was actually at home with my dad, and I was like, oh man,
top bin.
This isn't good, because that guy literally, he knows like he's just over the box, like it's just so precise. By the time the keeper gets the other side, it's too late, man. You know what I mean? So it was a good free, and his corner was amazing. For the near post header, Rashford should have marked better there as well. But yeah, it was a good game, and I'm happy that we're gonna go to we're gonna get another away game in the next game against Rich's West Ham.
You know what shocks me with this whole thing is that when we're talking about Cavani and we're talking about everything else, like I said Cavani is a hell of a signing. I mean, I think the only two players in the leagues across Europe that have more goals than him are Ronaldo and Messi in terms of the amount of goals he's put out for his clubs. So the reason it's taken so long for Ollie to be like, well, go have a run, I don't understand, but I don't think I'm not going to like keep him on the bench any longer. I think this is going to be the main number nine.
No,
I agree with you.
Yeah,
I think, Matt.
Well, I was going to say, I think United have been crying out for someone like that. I don't think Rashford always seems to be stronger coming off the wing. Martial has never quite stepped up to be that target man, and I think you've been needing that. And almost when Ibrahimovic was there as well, you kind of saw that the strength, the United's a stronger side when they've got a solid target man who can do the business. And I think it helps that he is so experienced. I think one of the weaknesses of United at the moment is there aren't a lot of leaders there. So the fact that he's able to go in there and do a job, I don't necessarily know that he's the kind of character who's going to drag along players with him. But I think he's strong enough that he'll go do a job on his own, and he's got the confidence and the professionalism and the experience to go do it. He doesn't need a whole supporting act. He's going to do his job. And I think United have needed that. I think that, you know, this game was really good for them in the fact that they faced a big piece of adversity, that, you know, uphill challenge, and they overcame it. And I think he played a big role on his own, obviously. But just his presence on the field also seemed to lift a couple of guys around him. You know, Rashford, his decision-making was still poor, but he seemed slightly more confident. His runs seemed a bit more incisive. And I think that played a big role in the whole side. And I think that's something United should be building around. The problem is, obviously, you don't know someone like Cavani's age is going to be able to play week in, week out, the kind of schedule they've got coming. But I think they need to find a way to use him more effectively and take advantage of what he brings, and also learn from what he's doing for the side and plan for when he's not there based on the system that he creates when he is there. Because that's been lacking. You haven't seen United look like that for a long time. I don't think there's been a lot of times where United go two down and you think they're not coming back from this. And this time it was different. Exactly. They had an energy and they looked like they were going to do something.
And I mean, if you Bruno Fernandes, who do you want to be leading the line? You know, you're going to be giving a guy like that the ball. He's going to be banging that thing, 9 out of 10 times into the back of the net. Yeah. He can, like he did on the weekend, single-handedly win you games. So it's an interesting way in terms of how they're going to go forward. Marcelo, I didn't get to watch the game, but with regards to Pogba, what's the scenario there?
Hey, bro.
He's injured, but he trained for the first time yesterday because he picked up a knock. In the international break. Him and McTominay both picked up knocks in the international break, and they both haven't trained until yesterday. So both of them have missed the last three games, but they both started training yesterday. It wasn't too bad of a knock, so he's back in training, and that's all.
All right, that's pretty decent. So how's things looking for this weekend coming with regards to the Champions League?
PSG also haven't been amazing this season. They drew on the weekend 2-2. And previously as well, they lost to Monaco after leading. So I see us, we need to just get a point to qualify. I think we'll frustrate PSG and catch them on the counter. And Rashford with his pace. Cavani obviously playing his former team wants to prove a point as well. So if he does start, I think we'll definitely get over the line and get qualification secured. And then coming up, West Ham as well. West Ham are in the top five now. They're becoming a bit noisy.
As well. If you look at the makeup of this panel, we talked about how we were going to focus on the top six, and then Arsenal and United and City are kind of dropping the ball. So if West Ham hadn't stepped up and Richard hadn't stepped in, we'd be looking a bit silly as a group.
Yeah, no.
Well, I don't know what you're doing about Nick, because apparently Newcastle's half their side have been like tested positive for COVID, so they've put in a special request this week to postpone the game. So maybe, you know, Nick's on. It's because he hasn't been around. I don't know what he's doing there.
Did he go visit them or something? Go hug all the
players. Must have.
No, guys, it was bound to happen. Eh? You know, other leagues have been affected where you find five or six players with COVID at a time. I've just been surprised that in the Premier League, it's only ever been one or two players in the team. But this is actually the first where it's been quite a number of players. And yeah, I think that game on Friday will definitely be postponed.
Right, Selon, before we move on from the Southampton United talk, overall thoughts of Ole in terms of direction? And I know Wonga's been crying out the whole season saying he's going to last the season. But what do you think? Do you think?
I think his away record has been amazing. It's been great. Even last season, he did well away from home, and this season going away from home he's been good. It's just sometimes you just question certain tactical setup in terms of the lineups he chooses. You know, for instance, he started Greenwood because he wanted Greenwood to have some minutes, which didn't make sense. He could have brought him off the bench rather, but sometimes he makes some questionable decisions. But all in all, you know, you want your team to win. You don't want a manager to be sacked. You know what I mean? You want the manager to be sacked, but you don't want your team to lose. So rather the team wins forever and ever. The guy can stay. Who cares? You know what I mean? As long as the team is doing well. That's the most important thing, you know what I mean? You know, he's probably got what, double the amount of points that Arsenal has right now. He's showing his worth, and he's fighting, which is good. He's showing that he actually wants the job, you know what I mean? He's fighting and he's grinding it out, and he's making sure that the guys actually do play for him, and it seems like they are playing for him, because I haven't seen them not wanting to play for him, but they definitely played for him. He must just be consistent in his decision making and instill confidence into the players as well. And then I think the results will continue. If Man United win their game in hand, they would be just about the fourth or fifth position in the league. So it's not looking too bad, and the top is not too far away. So let him go on and see what happens going into the new year.
Well, until the end, talking about a manager who is doing well, knows what he's doing, and with regards to, you know, getting inside, what should I say, buying into his sort of ideas and philosophy, let's talk about the game that was supposedly the big game of the weekend that actually worked out well for Liverpool in the end. The Chelsea Spurs fixture, Matt.
Before we continue, guys, I just got a message from a friend of mine. He says, Wonga looks like Dudizani Zuma, Jacob Zuma's son.
Look, I've heard this so many times. How do I look like that, Jed?
You gotta ask your dad some serious questions.
Sorry. Jose Mourinho, number one. Martinho, how are you feeling?
I mean, look, it wasn't a pretty game. Definitely, it was. But it was tense. I mean, yes, I think I messaged you guys off the game. I don't think I breathed for the full 90 minutes. It felt. It was high intensity, like the both sides were really all in. And I think for both teams, it showed the progression they both made. And I mean, you talk about Mourinho doing well, but fair play to Lampard. I mean, you look at how he's changed that side. They were also struggling defensively at the beginning of the season. Both Spurs and Chelsea have really turned around the records in terms of how they're keeping clean sheets and defending as units and kind of presenting a more clear understanding of what they've got to do to control the game. I think in that way, for both sides, it was a good example of what they do well. Both sides had their chances, particularly right at the end. You know, there was the chance that Rodon gave Giroud, really handed him on a silver platter that he just couldn't finish. And similarly, at the other end, Zuma misplayed a pass and Spurs should have done better. Lo Celso made the wrong decision and just really fluffed it. And so both sides could have really nicked it at the end. And it probably would have been slightly unfair on the losing side if one of them had gotten away and won it, because I think both sides defended really well. And both played, like, you can talk about Mourinho parking the bus, and he did. I think he went out there with a clear intention of not conceding a goal. But at the same time, both sides did create chances. There were there were moments of Spurs didn't take a lot of, didn't get to take many shots. I think our last shot was in the 20th minute or something. But there were chances created, and there were moments where it felt like both sides could have scored. But it was great to see from a Spurs perspective. It was awesome to see us keep a clean sheet in that kind of game. You know, traditionally, a game of that high intensity, Spurs end up conceding either early on because we just can't hack it, or late on because we don't know how to see it to the end. And I think this showed that there's a maturity in the side. And I've got a shout out to Dier. I mean, I've often said that I don't see him as a serious centre back on his own, but he kind of led the line and he did his job really well. There were one or two moments of where he was under a lot of pressure, and you could see he felt it, but he did his job really well. And Joe Roden on debut also had a very good game, aside from probably two or three sort of errors that you kind of expect from someone on debut in such a big kind of game. So, but the defense was really good. Højbjerg was immense again. I mean, the dude he's exactly what we were missing in the midfield. And I mean, I think I mention him every week now. Every time I talk about Spurs, I'm talking about him, but he is exactly what we needed. And credit to Mourinho for seeing that and identifying him as a replacement and putting him in, because he just clicked in the system and it really worked well. It would have been awesome as a Spurs fan to put away that chance at the end if Lo Celso just had made a better decision when he was, you know, he had all those, yeah. He had Kane on his left and could have taken a shot or whatever. But so I think there was options available and chances, and that would have been a real vindication, a real smash and grab, you know, no shots on target for 60 minutes and then come away with a win. Would have been a proper Mourinho game. But I think in much the same way as the City game kind of showed the progression we've made, this was another example of Spurs kind of facing another challenge and being able to step up to it. Stamford Bridge is never an easy place to go. Chelsea are never an easy team to play, regardless of what they're going through. And at the moment, they're going through a really positive spell anyway. I'm sure Mosel will tell you that of the two sides, they probably disliked this result more than we did. I think they would have wanted a win more than we did. Even with that said, I think both sides could be pleased with the performance. I think both sides played to a really high intensity and gave a good example of that kind of football. Not great for the neutrals, though. I mean, if you don't support one of the two teams and you sat through it, I do feel a bit bad for you.
No, but I think it was a very good game because that first half, Spurs were the top, with a better team. They were on top of Chelsea. Dombele was getting past Kante.
Oh, yeah.
Every time Kante was trying to get onto Dombele, and Dombele would cut, you know what I mean? And he would turn him and make the passes and everything. He was just looking so dominant in that midfield. And I feel that maybe they could have gone for it a bit more in that first half. That's when they had Chelsea. That's really when they had Chelsea. And I think that's where Chelsea in the second half, they obviously then came back into the game. And then obviously it was an even game because Chelsea tried to obviously impose themselves a bit more in the second half. But that first half, man, Spurs like really looked like a top two team that they currently are. You know what I mean? They were...
Yeah.
And it wasn't like it was a half park. So you know, like a double decker bus and a single decker bus. Mourinho had a single bus, not a double decker bus. You know, sometimes he had a double decker bus. He had a single decker bus. So he was resolute at the back, but then also even like Glenn Hoddle and analyzing at halftime, he was saying that Sissoko was covering for Aurier to allow Aurier to go forward, and so. Because Aurier had good runs and everything, man. And I was really impressed. And I felt that I was looking forward to maybe Bale coming on in the 75th minute. And I was just so hacked. I was so hacked.
Yeah.
Told you guys, like, Bale is never making an appearance in these big games. He's just not trust. There's no trust there. He's not going to do the hard work you're expecting. It's interesting to see like how a player like Sissoko in a side coached by Mourinho becomes your important player. That's just the sort of type of players. These guys are going to run their socks off, you know, to the bone until, you know, the very self, you know, it's not about them is what I'm trying to say. It's always about the team. And Mourinho loves those players. He glorifies those players. And those are the players at the end that are going to get your results. And now this is why Spurs are on the top of the table. And I like what you said, Matt, when you looking at, you know, these big games, isn't a game where they normally hold out with a clean sheet. They've now played City and they've now played Chelsea and they've gotten two clean sheets in those games and away from home. So if you don't build on that, if that's not something to say like how the club has progressed or how the team's progressed under Mourinho from that perspective alone, just from a mentality perspective, then I don't know. And I think one of the things he also came out saying, Mourinho, is he said for him, he was happy with the results. But what makes him really happy or happier is that the players weren't. And he says, now I can start seeing my boys. My boys now, the mentality is coming through and they really want this. And that's the big thing. That's the thing you want from your players. The players that are disappointed after a big game like that and they come away with only a point. Even though as a manager, you're going every point counts at this sort of scenario, especially when they're away from home. So you must be delighted from that perspective.
Oh, definitely. And I think to talk a little bit about the squad, you see some of the players, and you mentioned Ndombele and Sissoko and how they've progressed. And I mean, Ndombele is a fantastic example. He was his first few months in England, he was, you know, we were all a bit kind of, he didn't quite step up. It was unclear. And I think part of that was down to that was the last few months of Pochettino's era. And, you know, the system wasn't quite working the way we had wanted it to. And his position in that system wasn't really understood. But now, like this season, he's become one of our most important players. And that energy that he brought into the first half, I mean, he was just dominating the midfield. It was fantastic. And the role that Sissoko does, he just runs all day. And I've come around to him big time. I think a lot of Spurs fans, Sissoko's first season at Spurs was a big disappointment. And I used to just think of it as having an empty shirt on the field. And he's completely changed my mind. He's just the energy that he brings to every game, and also his awareness, his ability to be in the right place at the right time is huge. And he was freeing up Aurier a lot. And Aurier is another player who's just grown under Mourinho. Yep. And the you know, when we bought Doherty, it was like a lot of people thinking, well, we'll never see Aurier again. He's gone. Mm. But he's really stepped up, and his attacking play is phenomenal. His ability to kind of take the ball forward and do those smart, clever little triangles on the wing with whoever's there, be it Bergwijn or Son or whoever's playing on the right-hand side at that moment. He's really good at just opening doors and creating opportunities. And I think he's going to continue to be really important in those kind of games. And it is awesome to see the team walking off a game like that, not being happy. And even as a fan, there was a part of me that thought, if you'd offered me a draw before the game, I would have been like, oh, of course, gladly, let's have it. Let's have
a
point.
Exactly.
But then having watched the game, at the end of the game, I did think, oh, that's a good result, but we could have won that. We could have done a smash and grab. We could have come away with more because we weren't hanging on for dear life. It wasn't like we parked the bus and then we were just throwing
bodies in
front of every shot. Yeah, it was a high intensity game, but we weren't run off the field. Not to say Chelsea didn't have their chances. I mean, Chelsea had a lot. They had more chances than us. But what's been really good about what Mourinho has been doing lately is the sides that we play, and even it was true of City. City had quite a lot of chances, but they were always in kind of, for the most part, in kind of non-dangerous spots. You know, they're kind of hopeless shots from outside the box or players getting frustrated and just having to go from anywhere. And I think that even when we're facing a lot of chances, it doesn't feel as dangerous as it used to. And that's big for a Spurs fan. I mean, I've been watching them all my life, and for a long period, it would feel like anybody takes a shot against us is going to score. You know, I mean, there's times that we had Aurelio Gomes in goal for a while, and that was basically just his job was just to pick the ball out the net after someone took a shot. And, you know, like the evolution to that where I feel like a side to score against us now has to do a lot. They really have to work at it. They really have to do something special. And I think
one of Chelsea's best chances, one of their best chances was a shot from distance. That was it. So, I mean, if you are restricting your best opponents to long-range shots, I mean, they've really got to hit that thing sweetly. And how often do those realistically go into the back of the net? And if they do beat your keeper from that distance, then you've got to really stick your hands up and say, well done. If you can deny all that space up until that point, then you're doing your job. So sorry, Matt, I interrupted you.
No, I mean, you finished my point exactly. That's exactly where we want to be. If we can, I remember the one you mean, Mason Mount had a really good, and he hit it really sweetly. It was a really good shot. But to beat Lloris from that distance when he had full vision of the ball, you know, you've got to do something special. So,
but that was a good save, though. I don't think keepers wouldn't have actually touched that. That was a very good Lloris save.
And it dipped on him.
Yeah, he's Lloris is really good. He's easily one of the best keepers in the league. And I think sometimes, I was talking about it last week. I talked about Kasper Schmeichel being a really good keeper that we sometimes forget to mention. I think Lloris also sometimes gets forgotten when you talk about the big keepers in the league because he hasn't arrived for big money in that. He's been there for a little while. It was a fairly cheap deal back in the day. So I think, but he's definitely, for me, I wouldn't replace him with anyone currently in the league.
His shot stopping is up there, probably one of the best, if not the best, shot stopper. Just other elements of his game, I guess, that maybe you want to improve. But shot stopping, he does it well, and that's what you want from a keeper: is to save the shots, and which he does really well.
Yeah, but he's also now he's gotten to the point that he's been with the club so for such a long period of time. He is part of the culture. He is part of the fabric. So when your new players are coming in, he's the guy that you can lean a shoulder on, and he can say, "Listen, this is what we're about." And that also becomes what Liverpool have in abundance.
Didn't he want to box Son? I saw that time he wanted to punch Son in the face.
Yeah, they
yeah,
last,
bad.
Last season, they got into a bit of an argument over some stuff. But again, it's typical team stuff. You know, you're on there, the intensity's higher. It's same thing with players losing their temper when they walk off. You know, I don't think it's indicative of a wider kind of problem. I think it was a one-off kind of, you know, players shouting at each other. You expect it to happen from time to time. But yeah, he's a huge part of it. I mean, he's club captain and he's a really big influence on the squad. And you always feel better when he's on the field. The defense is more solid. He's, you know, there are elements of his game that are weak. Sometimes he sometimes struggles with decision-making for crosses and stuff. He doesn't always seem certain whether he should go for it or stay back. But overall, he adds points to us by being there.
Do you think he can go down as the greatest Spurs keeper ever?
I don't know. Depends how far back you go. Certainly in the Premier League era, probably. In the Premier League era, we've had a couple of really good keepers. Robinson was with us when he was in his prime, playing for England, scored that magnificent goal against Watford. So.
Yeah,
but I think that happens to keepers. I think, but and then, you know, and obviously Friedel was with us for a long time and he was an amazing keeper, but he was with us a bit later in his career, but he was solid. So, but I think probably, you know, I reckon he's got one or two more seasons with us. I think by then he would have hopefully won some stuff. And I think, yeah, but with that, if he captains us to a couple of trophies, then definitely he'll be our best.
Yeah.
And then arguably you'd also be able to start saying he's one of the best in Premier League history, never mind just Spurs history. I think that will be a serious point. So, yeah, good weekend for Spurs again.
Yeah,
I think
very
next
good
up
weekend.
Is a team that maybe didn't have such a good weekend.
Yeah, I mean that's the next thing. That's exactly where I wanted to go with this. Was talking about players you want on your field. I mean, Arsenal are crying out for an Ozil right now, and they just don't have him. And you know the poor results keep coming in. Wonga, I know you dread coming onto the cooldown largely because we talk about the results. And now's your time to shine, dude. Let off your chest. What the hell happened?
What happened?
Look, that's last week. I think I even said I saw Arsenal losing.
You did say
the score 2-1. I said it, and exactly that is because I saw Wolves taking more shots than Arsenal, getting and it looked like they wanted it more, and it looked like they could definitely. And the thing is, you can't say that Arsenal plays bad. For me, that's the worrying thing for me is that Wolves are just a better team than Arsenal. Watched the game and that's what it was. They were the better team. You can't even complain about look at Potence's goal. He left Gabriel on the floor, picked that ball up, buried it in the back of the net. Did you speak about him?
No, I'm just saying that chip over the defender.
Yeah, that little chip. Yeah, that was a damn good goal. Damn good goal. Even Gabriel did well as well to get up there and score his goal, but geez, I mean, even their first goal as well, it's just bumbling. It was back and forth, but you could see eventually that ball was going to end up in the back of the net. And I was just thinking, I mean, like I said, the worrying thing for me was that Arsenal doesn't get better than that. You know, it's what must they do to get better than what they do? They put Ozil in the team, but how far will that take us is my question as well. I've got someone, I mean, like Rob Holding, what is he good at? What's his best attribute, Rob Holding? Is he defending? Is he really good at defending? Can we replace
he's a nice,
him?
He's a nice chap, man. He's a nice player.
Yeah, I think that's, the shirt fits, you see, you know?
He's a nice English lad.
I looked, I saw, and I watched the game. I said, look, okay, maybe he's good at his distribution. He did very well with that. But again, I don't think it's enough. I mean, guys are going to take advantage of that. You got Traore, and you saw he got the yellow card. He had to take him down. Otherwise, it was just, it was clear through. But I think for me, the biggest thing with Arsenal, all in all, I think they are definitely missing a leader in the team. Like you're saying, there's Lloris there, who's been in the team for a long time. In Arsenal, Aubameyang's been there, but how long has he been there for? I mean, it's only like 4 years. He's a new man as well, you know.
But he was also never a leader. Aubameyang was never a leader.
That's what I'm saying.
You know, like other clubs, he scored goals. Yeah.
Yes, and I don't even if you and if even like when Henry moved to Barcelona, he scored Yes, he scored a lot of goals. I think it was 30 goals that season. It was way more than I understand he got the players around him and stuff, but geez, he looked even more lethal than he did the year before. And the year before that he was captain at Arsenal. And yeah. I think even at Arsenal, even the guys that led Henry, your Vieira's,
Tony Adams.
I mean, you had those guys that I think Mourinho put it very nicely when he was coaching. I think it was when he was at Porto. I'm not sure what the player's name was, but he said he had a captain there and they were losing a match. I can't remember the score, but they were losing. At halftime, the captain told him to wait outside. He said, no, chillax. I'll talk to these guys. He talked to them and then they went out in the second half. And they did the business. I can't remember if they won or draw the game, but Mourinho did nothing. He had that captain to do that. And I think I think even in Wenger's days, when he started losing Vieira and those guys, it was from there when he got all these young players, he struggled really, really struggled. And I don't think he even found a captain. And from there, we started peaking. We never even competed. Top four was our game. And I think that's because the other teams were also not stepping up. But now the other teams are stepping up.
It's not top 10. You're struggling to make that your game.
Well, I mean,
number 14, Newcastle is above us. Newcastle is above us.
Where's the
team has COVID?
There are 13 teams above us, Oaks.
I agree with Roy Keane. I think you guys have got enough to not be relegated this season on balance. Yeah. I think you'll still be in the Premier League next season.
Are you joking right now that's part of the conversation there, whether or not they're going to be
they've got enough to stay up, and I agree with him. I think Arsenal will stay up.
Like it's a joke, but honestly, I'm being honest with you guys. I watched that game and you're thinking, okay, Aston Villa they thumped us. Wolves have beaten us now. Which team do we beat? Do we beat Tottenham? No, we don't. Do we beat Man United? No, we don't. Do we beat those top six? We don't beat those guys. We don't beat them. Maybe with Uzu, we have a chance, but I still don't think... I think we need a lot more than that. I think our team needs a lot more...
I think one of the biggest issues you guys have as a side right now is that I think the board have decided, you know, they're going to stick with Arteta regardless. And I'm also, let's be fair here in terms of this isn't the easiest of seasons to be coming in as a manager, number one. But the other thing to be considered is that he looks like a manager who's experimenting. He looks like a manager who doesn't know exactly who his best 11 players are. And it's almost like when you're coaching 13-year-olds or whatever, and you've got like 100 kids that have come for trials. So you've got to really filter down the system and you've got to play like 100 games before you decide these are my 11 best players. And it's almost like he's doing that a little bit, but he's not getting, you know, in the beginning, every manager who comes in tends to have a little bit of a bounce. You know, the players tend to perform a little bit better. It's almost now it's becoming a bit worrisome where you're going, well, are the players really performing? And does he have enough of the metal to like pass it, like Mourinho's done, for example.
Yeah, but also for me with Arteta, like you talk about there, you know, not knowing who the best side is. But I wonder also, sometimes it feels like there isn't even a clear, complete conviction on what the best system is. You know, because to know who your best players are, you've got to know this is the system I'm playing for. So I need to work out which of my midfielders is going to do that job. I need some guy who's going to hold, some guy who's going to push. And you know, so Mourinho had to play around. He had to found a hole in the squad where Sissoko has now fit, and he's built a role for himself in the squad. And that with Arteta, sometimes he seems to have like a basic formation that he's putting together, but not a clear system that leads to, you know. And the players seem to lack some sort of like clear instruction around what's going to happen next. You know, what do we do when we're in this situation? And go ahead.
I think I disagree with the thing, the fact that you're saying that he doesn't know his best players, because that for sure he does. You remember, look at Saka. Saka started at the left back. Look where he's playing now. And he hasn't played him at the left back unless there's injuries around the field. Saka, everyone sees that. Saka's definitely dangerous down the left wing. He's put him there. Aubameyang, you know where Aubameyang is. Willian, he knows who Willian is. Partey's fit. He's on the field. Gabriel played every game, left week in, week out. Tierney's fit, he's on the field, week in, week out. Rob Holding, Lord knows why, but he's there on the field.
But David Luiz got injured. Come on, we know David Because at least that's one player I can say in Arsenal that
yes,
when he has played, he's actually been solid this season. You know what I mean? I remember against what's this thing, Leicester. When he came off with the injury, that's when Naldo's minus one at the back. That's where you guys lost it. And also this weekend, if you think about it, he came off with the head injury, obviously, at halftime.
Shit. I forgot about that. Hey. Rob Holding.
Exactly. Yes. So obviously that is like your most important defender because he's actually got that leadership to marshal the defense. And without David Luiz, man, can you believe we're saying this? But without David Luiz, your defense is nowhere because there's no one to tell them anything because he actually does. Right. Hey man, listen, do this, do that, and he can pass back. He makes a good long pass left, long pass. He can pass with any foot, and he hasn't made any errors this season. You know what I mean? He's actually
you're right in that fact. I did forget about that. That he was subbed out because that head injury. But one player I'm impressed with. He's actually made it. He's actually putting it. I thought he's you know, one at all, he's chillaxed, but he's not. He actually wants to play and wants to play hard at a high level, and he's pushing himself, and that's what I like about him. But Rob Holding again, I wouldn't start him. But David Luiz, sorry, I forgot about him. Gabriel, you see, and then they got Bellerin as well. Arteta knows his best team, but I think again, is that I think what they do missing at this point in time is definitely the creativity. It's with Arsenal, it's everyone can see it. You go down the left. If it's not working down the left, you go all the way down the right. If you can, maybe once, cross it in. Yeah, it's literally, you're not going to pass it to the striker in the middle, maybe one, two. It's literally just around there. That whole moon shape, whatever he calls it. Maybe they've got an
expert even. You know, that used to work in FIFA 98. You just put the ball down the wall. Pass it down the wing, you cross it in, and it was like a glitch in the game. You just hit circle, and it always score. Yeah. I think they're still playing FIFA 98 over there.
The thing I just wonder, the way I question Arteta is he doing more than that? Because like we could sit down and between the four of us, we could probably pick a decent 11 out of Arsenal's squad. There's a debate to be had as to whether that squad is actually strong enough. You know, how many of Arsenal's starting 11 would make it into the starting 11 of the 10, 13 clubs above them? Probably not as many as we would want. But the thing that you expect from someone like Arteta is to create more than just some of their parts. This isn't Football Manager. You know, we could sit down and pick 11 guys to go on the field. That does nothing. You know, you want someone like Arteta to be able to say, with U11, I'm going to do this. We're going to achieve this. Mm-hmm. This is the plan. When this happens, you've got to adapt in this way. You know, and you just don't seem to see that with Arsenal at the moment. They're very kind of, there's one approach. It's all a bit two-dimensional. Aubameyang is just gone. Like, we've talked about it a few times. I'm still convinced he's been replaced by a lookalike. Like, I think there's just missing elements that you expect. And I think that's what people thought they were getting with Arteta. I think they thought, you know, this is Pep's protege, he's going to step up, he's going to bring certain nuances, and it just seems to be very kind of stuck, and he doesn't seem to know what to do when the chips are down. I think that's a big factor.
When you say Pep's protege, man, it just reminds you of that time when he says, what did Pep tell De Bruyne?
These guys are eating.
Guys, look, for me this works two ways, man. And it's almost like, you know, you get this modern manager that when you're coming into a club, you know, you need to have a philosophy, and you take the current crop of what you have and you try and make them play according to that philosophy. And if they're not really up to the task, you kind of filter them out up into the opportunity where you are given the finances or the resources to replace them with other players. And then you get the manager like a Mourinho, who comes in and he's very reactive. Like, you know, he's not glorified for this by any means, but he'll set up his team as to stop another team, and he'll use what he has to his disposal, and he'll make the best of their qualities. And that's kind of, if we're comparing the two scenarios, that's kind of where we find ourselves right now. Is Arteta's going, he knows he's been given time. He's going, okay, cool. Well, this is how we want to play. Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's see if these players are up to it. Let's see if they can do it. And if they can't do it, you know, it's going to get to a point where January, hopefully they are saying, I'm going to get supported. And then I can start saying, okay, let's get these guys out, and these are the players I need. Unfortunately, now when the conversation starts taking a turn, it's about relegation. I think you've got to start tweaking a little bit. For me, it always makes sense. If you come in, you need results first. Use the players that you have and maximize their qualities. then get the results. And once you get those results, you build the confidence and winning mentality, get the leaders, you can start earmarking those leaders. And then from there, you can gradually start chopping and changing. You don't just come in and say, well, fuck you guys, this is how we're playing. Okay, yes, yes, no, you suck, you can't fit my system. Okay, oh shit, you know what, all 22 players can't fit in my system, but I still got the rest of the season to go. What am I meant to do? You know, that's not viable.
But you see, like, even, but what surprised me about Arteta, maybe I'm also one, not I can't say anything because I wasn't there, but he was there at Man City when Kompany was there. I mean, surely he saw how the guy was leading the team. Surely, yeah. When he went to Arsenal, 100% when he went to Arsenal, did he see that? Hey, look here.
I need a leader.
Definitely, we need something. We need someone to lead this team. Because definitely the manager is not doing it on his own. He's definitely not going to do it on his own. We can see that with Liverpool. Klopp, big figure. We know how he's very charismatic, but... There he's got your Jordan Henderson.
Yeah.
Late to the players.
But you know what? Longer, you've mentioned something interesting, but it's not even just the players. Klopp's got he's the staff he has around him are like mini Klopps. They're all bought into the same thing. If he's not there, you've got a Pep Linders who's able to step up the mark and motivate he's coaching the players on a day to day. He's got Peter Kajwitz, who's been with him since 2001, who speaks and acts and behaves in the same manner he does. All of them are buying into the same thing. And that's not just, again, that's from squad level. You've got Michael Edwards. You've got all of them. They are buying into the same thing. So until those things start to align, I think it's the same thing with the United. United, you know, slowly they can get the results because they've got the resources and they're a big enough club that they can have. I mean, they've made these mistakes over the last couple of years and they can afford to make them because they've got the money to bail them out every time. But until these things start aligning, this is where the clubs are going to start, you know, coming face to face with the train and see whether or not they're still on track. But the one thing I want to ask you guys is that obviously one of the big talking points that came out of this weekend was the fact that the head collision between David Luiz and, you know, Jimenez has led to a fractured skull and other players out. And we know a lot of the players, after they've fractured their skull, they don't normally come back the same way. So, and the conversation in particular is one about concussions and how the Premier League deals with these sort of things. So what do you guys think about this? I mean, it's been years. Football is one of the sports where they focus on head injuries, and yet they haven't really, you know, dealt with this in the past.
But I'm not too sure about any other... I've not looked at, but all I remember was Peter Cech's one, and that was pretty bad. That was a stud to the head, even.
And the Spurs player, what's his name? Remind me, Matt. Gary Cahill hit him. What's his name? He was playing for Hull as well, and Spurs.
Dawson. Dawson.
No,
man,
yes, Dawson.
Dawson.
Not Dawson.
Who?
The centre mid, man. The centre mid, man.
Ryan Mason. White? Yeah, Ryan Mason.
Ryan Mason.
Oh, yeah, Ryan Mason was not.
And his season, his career ended because Cahill hit in the head in the box or whatever. And yeah, he's gone.
I don't know about that. Maybe off field on goalkeepers are different, but I remember Peter Cech, they dealt with him pretty well. And they, I remember from that point on, they were pretty much.
He wore
the helmet, though. It changed him psychologically.
But it changed them back. Yes, Karen?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's one of the challenging things. And I think, obviously, the psychology of the player and bringing them back is a big factor. But I think, for me, the thing that the Premier League's gotten wrong is that they still leave it up to individual clubs to what to do with the injured player. So Arsenal kept Luiz Jean until half-time. And obviously, Jimenez had to go off. I mean, he was so badly hurt, he couldn't stay on. But I think there should be an independent medical person on the field who looks at the situation and goes, no, you have to come off, no choice. Because I think it all turned out all right, Luiz seems to be fine. But if something had gone wrong, if, you know, 10 minutes later he had collapsed, people would be looking and going, who the hell let him stay on? What was the decision? Yeah. Why did we? And I think the fact that that's in the hands of the clubs is still a slightly damning thing. You look at other sports, you know, the NFL, where head injuries were a huge factor. They've really taken big strides in that. There's independent people on site. They make calls if there's any kind of inkling of kind of danger or whatever. They pull them off and go straight away to the right kind of protocols. And I think that's something the Premier League does need to change, and it does change the psychology of it. Ryan Mason, I'd forgotten about it, but it's a good example of how it changed his career. I mean, he'd been a Spurs boy all his life, and then just wasn't able to keep up with it off there. And I think it's a great shame to see players because it's such a big part of the game. Especially someone like Jimenez, getting up for a head is going to be a big part of how he plays. And now there's going to be an element of doubt when he comes back. And for him to get over that, and I hope he's able to. I hope he's to make a full recovery and come back and play at the level he's always played at. But there's, I mean, and all of us are human. You'd be in the same situation. You have that bad an injury, you're not going to want that to have happen twice. So it is, and Jason's made a good point. Should we be following the rugby example? And probably we should, you know. And there's been a lot of talk about head injuries as well in the context of dementia. You know, Charlton being diagnosed with dementia and players coming up. Gary Lineker's talking about it quite a lot, saying that how often do players need to head the balls in trainings, particularly young players, you know, teenagers heading the ball a lot, and the potential damage that can do later in life. And you look at players who are heading the ball all the time, you know, players like Andy Carroll, Harry Kane, and, you know, are defenders, they doing irreparable damage to the head? Yeah, a lot of defenders. Slabhead, for example, he's getting his head on the ball every week. And, you know, are they? Is this something that we should be looking at more seriously? Or do we need to have a discussion around, is it worth it? Is it worthwhile for the sake of this game? And it is just a game. It is all about fun and it should be enjoyable. It shouldn't be, I'd hate to think that for my enjoyment, there's 20 or 30 young people who are giving themselves dementia every weekend. And I think that's something we should be talking about, head injuries more, not just when it's big and scary and people bleed, but the long-term effects of the way they play the game. And shouldn't we talk about that?
That is definite discussion that I know the FA have actually taken part. Like, I know they've even now, it was maybe 2 years back where they took the decision to say that no under 13 player should be training the headers. I mean, headering in training. And it's because of that, the long-term effects of it and all that stuff they looked at. All I'm just saying is, they are definitely doing something, and there's definitely room for improvement, and they could definitely make decisions like right now. I caught the game just after David Luiz and them got out of the incident, and I was wondering why he was wearing that head bandage. And then when I heard that Jimenez was his head was in half, I was just trying to figure out how is this guy still on the field. You know, I was just wondering.
And the reason they took off Luiz is because at halftime he said he wasn't confident to hit the ball. That's why they took him off. He just told them,
I'm actually
not confident to hit the ball. And that's why they took him off. But they should have taken him off because of the concussion, the test.
100%.
It's not good. Because they ask you, who are you playing against? What's the current score line? What did you have for breakfast this morning? Where are you? What's your name? All these things. And if you answer everything, safe. They say you can carry on. You know what I mean?
Nah, it's not. Yeah. That's not right. To be safe, you should, if you hit it, get the guy off, get someone else. Otherwise, long term.
I think, you know, if I was watching, if we were playing a friendly game, you know, four of us kicking about in the garden or whatever, and started bleeding, you wouldn't be like, hey mate, do you still remember where we are? Yeah, you're right, carry on. You know, as soon as someone bled, we'd be like, oh, hey, take a step back. I think we should all slow down.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of common sense should be taken into a Premier League game where the man is bleeding. You had to bandage his head. He probably shouldn't be playing professional sport for the next 60 minutes. And, you know, that kind of thing is, I think, you know, it's we are now, we live in a time where it's possible to have quite a lot of science behind these discussions. I think we should have that. I think there should be people doing proper studies and saying, if we're seeing a very high prevalence of professional footballers going on to develop neurological disorders related to having headed the ball consistently for 30 years of their life, then we maybe need to have a serious discussion about whether or not this is how we should be playing the game. And then when there's the extremes of that, where players collide heads and start bleeding, then it should be a no-brainer. And I think that's something that we should be getting right. And I think the fact that it's taken us so long is probably another indictment on what Claudio was saying earlier around this is a massive machine to try and make money, and things like the safety of the players on the field at a macro level around making them play too much is clearly not a concern. But even at the micro level where a player is bleeding and they're happy for the thing to continue because it's, you know, they bandaged it up, he can cap on playing.
Then
I think we should be more concerned about the safety of things and the example that it leads, because it also makes kids think that you don't stop. You get hurt, you got to carry on. You got to you're bleeding. Okay. And I don't want that. I don't want my kids to think that if they bang their head really hard that it's bleeding, that if the coach tells them you're all right, that they've got to stay on the field. I want my kids to feel like if my safety's in danger, I want to be able to walk away. And I think that's, you know, we should have that conversation. We should be pushing that down the agenda. We should be forcing the Premier League with all of its money to put some research into that stuff.
Yeah.
Rant over. Thanks for coming to my ticket.
No problem. Yeah, no, they should also start focusing their time and efforts just to get rid of VAR. I think that's in amongst all the other things. I know to bring them back to that. But yeah,
we're always focused on the seriousness.
Oh, Claudio. We started the show with VAR, man.
We started with it in the name.
One more note before I completely end it all there. And that pretty much wraps up the show for the cool down today. Thank you for everyone for joining us. Thank you guys for joining me. I really enjoyed it. And yeah, good luck for whoever's teams are playing in the Champions League. I know Liverpool are playing tonight against Ajax. We'll see what happens there and what kind of squad they put out. And Wonga, you know, if you need us to fax your man Arteta, just let us know. We've got a lot of toilets on speed dial.
But you know what, Claudio, just for me, last thing to say about Arteta for Arsenal, I just think even if they get Ozil back, I think we will always be competing, maybe top six. We still got a lot.
For this season.
We got, if say Ozil comes back, we can compete for top six. Let's say for sixth spot. He's let me say that. Back. Yeah. Let me say sixth spot. That's what I'm saying is that maybe we could compete there for sixth position if Ozil comes back. Okay. But no ways we're looking at getting into your Champions League, winning the league, just because Ozil is back. No ways.
You know what is interesting? That Wolves were experimenting on the weekend and they still beat an Arsenal. So that's a whole different type of category. I see Wonga's had his final thoughts. Matt, you have your final thoughts. Seto, I have your final thoughts. And then that's the show.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to another week of Spurs at the top of the league. You know, like I said last week, I think we should stop the count now. Let's end it. Give us a trophy. We'll all walk away.
No, I'm all good. Glad that we got the win. I want two more wins this week before we face Leipzig and then the Manchester derby coming up the following weekend.
Well, until the end.
Enjoy the push, Claudio.
Thank you.
Cheers, guys.